Business Minds, presented by the Florida Business Journals, and brought to you by TECO Peoples Gas, at the heart of Florida's energy. In this episode, South Florida Business Journal Editor-in-Chief Mel Melendez welcomes Jermaine Smith-Baugh, President and CEO of the Urban League of Broward County.
Welcome, Jermaine. Thanks so much for joining us today.
It's so good to be with you, Mel.
Now, you head an organization that operates many programs that assist residents with education, entrepreneurship, job training, housing and health, and much more. But you also serve as a resource for many companies in South Florida that are looking to revamp or implement diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. In fact, you partnered with the South Florida Business Journal on our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Initiative, and you've led several panels that shared some winning strategies and best practices with our readers. So I wanted one of these podcasts to center on DE&I, since it's at the forefront of concerns for companies who want to support their employees at a time when movements like Black Lives Matter and Me Too have highlighted the dire need for equality and supportive workers. So can you chat a little bit about some of the ways that achieving equity in the workplace helps both employees and companies be successful?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Mel. And I actually really do appreciate, you know, your commitment to wanting this topic in particular of equity to be one of your headliners, right, for your podcast. So on behalf of the Urban League of Broward County, our board of directors, staff, volunteers, and the people that we serve, thank you for creating this space for us to have a conversation. So in terms of some of the ways that achieving equity in the workplace helps employees and companies be successful, I think over, you know, definitely over the decades, but nonetheless, these last 2 years in particular, what I call the eruption of consciousness that has taken hold of community and corporate spaces, you know, data and research definitely prove the fact that companies that really put diversity, equity, and inclusion at the forefront of their strategies are companies that definitely demonstrate higher levels of innovation. They are also able to meet better performance outcomes. They have a culture that is much more welcoming and engaging. And when you look at the retention of their employees, it's definitely greater, higher than organizations who choose, whether directly or indirectly, not to have clear equity strategies at the forefront of their goals and their metrics. And I think what's really important is for companies that are successful at it, they're very clear about how equity plays into their overall and overarching goals for their company. It's not just something that they do on the side. It is something that is integral with measurements and with metrics.
Great. Now, are these efforts even more essential now that companies are bringing workers back to their offices after extended periods of employees working from home and watching the news of all the madness that's happening in the world?
Yeah, and definitely madness and crisis it is, right? That seems to be reigning in so many different ways. So the short answer to that is a yes with an exclamation mark. I think that even here at the Urban League, we're an employer of about approximately 80 employees. As we are bringing people and have brought people back into the workplace, I think the efforts related to diversity, equity, and inclusion are important even more now because for basically 2+ years, we have been isolated, separated in some way, shape, or form. So whether positive or negative, we were able to hide, cover some of the areas, you know, that we probably would not have been able to if you have to be proximate with individuals. So I do think at this time that sense of connection and belonging is so important to employees now. And I think it's even more important, not only because we're bringing people back into the workplace, but I don't know about you, Mel, it seems like we forgot all our emotional intelligence over the last couple of years, right? Yeah. So we definitely need to be very proactive as leaders and heads of companies to really be thinking about what type of culture we are reinforcing with our policies, our programs, you know, our practices.
Well, as someone who helps train companies in this area, can you talk about the steps that you recommend companies take to launch or even revamp existing D&I programs? And has that become even more complicated, you know, now that some workers are in full time and others are hybrid and some are fully remote?
Well, that last part of your question, let's get to that part. I don't know sometimes if I'm supposed to be in a virtual meeting, is it in person? I don't know, you know, so it is definitely the modality by which we choose to engage these days, I think, creates some mental gymnastics, right, that we all have to embrace and figure it out. But I do, just to step back a little bit, so for the Urban League of Broward County, we see our role in racial equity, in particular, diversity and inclusion, as a convener. We see ourselves in providing resources and tools to CEOs at every level, for-profit, not-for-profit, individuals, it doesn't really matter to us. So we really do see our role really more as convener, as an accountability partner. Those are the areas that we tend to do well in. We engage trainers, we engage individuals. When companies ask us for very specific training, we will do that. But I do think, in answer to your question related to, you know, what steps companies should be taking or we recommend, the first thing that I say to people when I have the opportunity to speak to CEOs is to take the time to listen. I do believe that particularly as CEOs, we spend so much time imparting our vision, imparting, you know, where it is that we see the company a year from now, 10 years from now, that in this space, and in, I think even more in this time, it's really important that we take a step back and listen to our current employee base, you know, provide an opportunity for them to tell their stories. Storytelling is so important, I believe, in this work, because that is where you get to be proximate, meet people where they are, because we make so many assumptions, right, about people's journeys and how they show up, that the first thing I often say to people, or ask actually, how much time did you spend listening to the folks, letting them tell their stories, not you espousing all the goals and which employee resource group we're launching tomorrow, but just to listen. I want to hope that in launching or revamping, that that is the first strategy that everybody takes, you know, listening tours, listening sessions, whatever term you want to put to it, just stop. Just stop and listen and let it not just be a one-time thing, but allow it to be an ongoing part of your leadership strategy, you know, really just buttoning up the mouth, sitting there and taking it in. I think the second piece is once you really begin to truly listen, then you're able to really kind of identify commonalities and themes within the worker or the employee experience, right? Whether that experience be internal to the company or external. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting in working with some of particularly our investor partners here at the Urban League is as they began to do this listening with their employees, they began to realize that the role, and many companies clearly have corporate social responsibility, engaged with all kinds of not-for-profits and organizations, but then they began to listen to stories of what it felt like for members of their organizations, associates of their organization, living outside the company. What it felt like to be stopped. What it felt like to be tagged in a store and followed. Those aren't things that's happening within the company, but these are experiences that their employees are having, right, Mel? So what role do you play as an employee, particularly large employees here within our county and within our area, to impact what happens with policing, what happens with law enforcement? So they began to see their role a little broader, right, than only what is happening within their company. So I would suggest very strongly to take the time to listen, identify those themes and issues that are internal and external. And then thirdly, then act. Do something. So I would, you know, just in summary, say that, you know, steps that companies can take first is to listen, you know, to your employer base, making sure that you're allowing that storytelling to come through. Secondly, identifying the themes, whether they are internal or external to the organization, because people bring their whole selves to the company and you want that. So you want to be identifying those issues and themes that may be impacting equity within your company from the employee perspective. And then last, act. It doesn't matter how big, how large the action is. Let's go ahead as leaders to be courageous, be bold, and act and do activities that actually support the employees in their work.
All of that is great advice. So what does a successful DE&I program look like? What must they include? I mean, you talked about the listening and the identifying all the commonalities and then acting or whatever. Should this be mostly manager-led? Should employees be involved? What are some of the most successful characteristics of a winning DE&I program?
Wow, that's a really powerful question, Mel, around those characteristics. So I'll delve into some. I'm sure your listeners can, you know, add a few others. But I think first and foremost, you want it to be engaging at all levels, right? So a lot of times we focus on the top, right? The leader, the CEO, whomever needs to be engaged. That's absolutely important because that also allows for resources, right? To flow, gives a very clear directive to everybody else. And then we talk about the end, the associate, the end user, quote unquote, the employee, particularly at the direct level, having them involved and engaged in the process to define what the DE&I solutions can look like and should be and what is actually going to work for them. But I want to throw out an idea to your listeners that if you have the top working, and you got the quote unquote, let's call it the front line. Let's call it the front line. So you got the top level working and the front line working. Then what we got to be careful about is the frozen middle. So that middle right there is where that middle management, frontline supervisors and so forth, is where all of it could really fall apart if you're not careful. Right. So when we think about successful D&I programs and the characteristics of it, it includes all levels with a real clear understanding that your middle section has to be engaged in moving it forward, to releasing your frontline workers to be engaged and involved, as opposed to saying, oh, yeah, they're having that employee resource group meeting, but you got all of this that you need to do over here, right? You can't attend that or can't be a part of it. So how do we make sure that that middle doesn't get frozen so that we stop the progress of what's there? I think a second characteristic of successful DE&I programs are ones that have really clear goals with metrics, right? We, in our Ready toolkits, we outline four areas: inclusive workplace culture, diversity, talent development and advancement, supplier diversity and equitable purchasing, and equitable community investment as four areas of key focus for a racial equity, diversity, inclusion initiative. And under each one of those, we give very specific strategies, ideas related to how to implement those. So I think just getting very clear that you may not want to do all of it, you might do some of it, but be clear about where it is that you want to go. And then last but certainly not least, have an accountability structure to it, right? And then the question is, who are you accountable to? Is it only accountable internally? Are you accountable externally? Or is it both? And what does that accountability look like? And what are you willing to hold yourself responsible for and to by being able to put that information out there, even when it may not make you look great? Because it's in those moments, it's in those gaps that you actually get the opportunity to challenge your programs, challenge your policies, and challenge your practices.
Yeah, so how can companies gauge when their programs are in fact working successful and their employees are happy? And like, you know, what are some of the things they should look for?
Right. So I think, you know, going back to that listening piece, incorporate that constant opportunity for engagement and listening so that you get that real-time feedback. Success sometimes clearly is you do success by the numbers, you know, the quantitative piece, and I'll give some examples there. But there's also the qualitative, the stories that come about related to the way that employees may feel about what is transpiring within the company, the way in which they have connected differently or feel a greater sense of belonging to the organization, you know, and the like. But on the other side, on the quantitative side, and in our Ready Toolkit, we actually give very specific examples under each one of the focus areas. You know, if you select, for example, supplier diversity and equitable purchasing as an area that you want to see success in, you can be really clear about where you are baseline, right? Looking at how much spend you do every year overall. And then you can pull the data on how much spend you do with various racial and ethnic groups, gender groups, and the like. You can baseline that. And then you can look at what is your policy related to being able to have equitable purchasing with these respective groups. And a lot of times what I hear, because we run an entrepreneurship center, we're actually a community development financial institution, so we lend money to small businesses. We get from suppliers, oh, I can't find anybody. Wrong. They're there. They're out there. The question becomes, how are you going to make it work for those suppliers to get into your pipeline? So I might not be able to do $1 million contract, but I might be able to do $500,000 contract. So are you willing to break that contract down so that others can get into it? So again, once you know what your baseline is and you make a commitment to increasing, changing, et cetera, then you can take a look at what your policies are and what strategies might be out there to help you move the needle. And then you're willing to measure yourself against that.
Jermaine Smith-Baugh joining us. Next, she dispels the myths of DE&I in South Florida as Florida Business Minds continues. Peoples Gas. Through its innovation and infrastructure investment, Peoples Gas has maintained safe and reliable delivery of natural gas to homes and businesses since 1895. More about Peoples Gas at the heart of Florida's energy. At floridasenergy.com.
As you know, DE&I can be a sensitive subject for some folks who sometimes say they don't really see the need for these programs because they treat all of their employees equitably. Can you speak on why a statement like that could be problematic?
Yeah, I think it's loaded with a lot of different experiences, at least when I hear it. And it's loaded with a lot of different experiences from the individual. So first, I seek first to understand, right? Where is it coming from? This idea that everybody, you know, we at this point, we should all be able to get access and do what we need to do and move forward. It's a perspective. Most recently, we released in February, the state of Black Broward, and in collaboration with Hispanic Unity of Florida, released the state of Hispanic and Immigrant Broward.
I saw that.
Yeah, the research was done by Florida International University Metropolitan Center. And in presenting that data, sometimes we get statement like this. But what I share with people is this, there are a lot of different maps in that report. And I give two examples. That when we talk about equity and what it means, to me, I really simplify it by meeting people where they are. So all of us have life experiences, past, current, and whatever the future holds, that allows us to be in certain places at certain times, with certain experiences, certain opportunities and challenges. And I often say to people, when you look at issues of educational access, health access, access to capital, if you're a small business, whatever, you know, just listed, right? Whatever it might be. If I'm only dealing with one issue, like education, I'll be able to go around it. If I'm dealing with two issues, like education and health disparities, I might be able to squeeze through it, right? Two bars, right? I squeeze through it. But the challenge for many communities and many people groups is that they're dealing with all of these issues, education, health, justice, environment, and so forth, all converging on them at the same time. And to be able to create that creates bars that you can see opportunity, but you can't get to it. And if we're really going to be equitable, we have to understand that some people groups deal with several bars that they are looking at. And how do we begin to dismantle the structural bars that are in place, whether they are related to health, education, job access, and the like? So I think when employers in particular are like, well, I treat everybody equitably, you are dismissing the experiences of the people. And that is why it's important to start first with listening. Because once you listen, I don't think you can say that. Once you listen to an individual story of what it feels like as a Black woman to this day to still be in rooms where I am the only one sitting there, only, and when I say only, just only of color, period, you know, there's a weight that goes with that that nobody will understand unless you've either had that experience or you allow me to tell that story of what it feels like, of what it feels like when people touch my hair as though I'm a little child and be like, oh, how cute is that? And I'm like, how did you do that? Those are like little simple things, but I'm not in this room as a corporate leader to talk about my hair. You know, I'm in here to address whatever the issues are. So those are little simple examples. But I do think that what we do have to challenge ourselves around as leaders is to reject this idea that everybody starts at the starting line with the same resources. Some people have on Nike shoes. Some people have on socks. Some people have on no shoes. But all of us, when that gun goes off, we're running to hit that end mark. So we all need to bring the resources to our employee groups to meet them where they are.
I thought that once I moved to South Florida, which is inherently diverse, that these conversations would be easier to have. But I once had someone tell me that workforce DEI programs aren't really essential in a place like South Florida because it is inherently diverse. I mean, I told them that I disagree with that, but what are your thoughts on that or whatever? Does being diverse hinder or advance these conversations?
I actually think that in a community like ours, that on the surface, let's be clear, on the surface, by numbers, we live in a quote unquote majority minority county, as they would say. Black and brown individuals by numbers are higher. Our largest in the last decade, our largest growing population here is Hispanic and Latino. That surface. The power structure is different. And that's a whole nother podcast in and of itself, I know. Right. But that is why it is important, or even more important, to have diversity, equity, and inclusion conversations happening at every level of our community, in government, in corporations and businesses, in the not-for-profit world, because we can so quickly get to the illusion of diversity that we don't have the hard conversations around where is the equity in the diversity? Where is the wealth building and sharing? Where is the power building and sharing? Because we look like a county that is all diverse. That gets into a deeper place, but that's why I think it's so important that we have these conversations, unlike a place that may not be as racially and ethnically diverse, a little bit more homogeneous, be like, oh yeah, we're good. This is the place where you have to have it because of what we so quickly on the surface can dismiss. That's just my opinion.
No, I think that's an excellent point. Now, multiple studies show that companies are hiring more diverse workers at the entry and mid-levels, but they often don't promote them to leadership positions or even hire them for leadership roles. Why do you think that is? And how does having diverse leaders in place already help with those efforts?
Yeah, I think going to the latter part of that, how having diverse leaders in place is so important. When you walk into a room, your natural inclination from the time you were a little kid is to find people that look like you. Whether that look like is by race, ethnicity, gender, their actions, their interests, whatever, that's what we do. We're human beings attracted to likeness. And when you have individuals who are diverse in leadership, when these other individuals walk into the room, they see likeness. They see the opportunity that I can be here or I can be there. But also when folks of diverse candidates or employees are sitting at the table, they raise questions that won't normally get to the table, right? Well, why do we only have these candidates? What about, and what about, and what about? If you don't have that level of diversity sitting at the table, and I think we should just blow up the dang tables. I think we should just fill the room, you know, with it. Then we lose the opportunity to challenge ourselves around what it is that we see or don't see. And one of the things that even in companies that may be highly diverse, i.e., being very direct here with your listeners, an urban league is highly diverse. Mm-hmm. When we then begin to break down our diversity, people begin to ask, well, do we have Black folk, but do we have Creole speaking folk? Do we have Haitian and Haitian Americans a part of this makeup of a community that is changing in that way? There was a time, again, full disclosure, where I looked at the board of directors of the Urban League and I was just like, hello, people, we have no Hispanics on the Urban League board of directors. What is that, right? We got to get intentional about what it is that we look. So even an entity that espouses these beliefs of diversity and the like, we have to check ourselves and make sure that we are, again, not being surface, but getting to the deeper questions. And I think the opportunities to have individuals at the table begins to ask different questions, which then invites different people into the room.
Yeah, that leads to my next question, because diverse job candidates are now highly sought after. I mean, at a time when everyone is struggling to fill positions. So what can employers do to entice diverse applicants to want to come on board? And once they're on board, what can companies do to ensure that they thrive and can move up the ranks?
Yeah, get intentional. I think that we know the right thing, quote unquote, the right thing to do. We may even have the desire to do it. Now we need to get intentional about it. So the first thing I would say is have the opportunity to talk with your current diverse employees and ask them what attracted you and what keeps you here. Because that's what you want to amplify. You want to amplify it in a way that helps put your culture at the forefront for other diverse candidates to see. But let me caution, we do not want to put our diverse employees on showcase. That is something that I have definitely seen, and it makes me have cringe moments. So we need to be balanced in that. Ask permission. Do you want to go to this hiring fair? Things like that. You know, simple little things that we just assume like, oh, we'll just push these folks out there. Uh-uh. You got to make sure that folks are comfortable wanting to be in that space, right? So when we talk about attracting and enticing diverse job candidates, I think talk to your current diverse employees, what keeps them, what attracted them, what keeps them, amplify that. But then now let's get fully intentional about moving them up the ranks. Because my conversations with individuals has been, yeah, I got in, but in essence, I'm frozen here. I'm not moving. So what are the development plans for those individuals to help them move forward? And how do you get in front of that by being very clear with them that this is our intention for you? What is your intention for yourself? And how do we bring both those together to get you to the next level? Because I'm going to be accountable for your movement as you are accountable for your own movement.
Thank you so much, Jermaine. This has been a great conversation. I know it's going to be very helpful to a lot of our listeners. And I will see you on our next panel, because I always look forward to chatting with you.
Thank you so much, Mel. Thank you for the great questions. And again, to your listeners, whatever value that we can bring to you and your company in establishing and revamping, launching, and being accountable to your DEI efforts, you can always check us out at ulbroward.org.
Well, thank you. And to the Urban League for all that you guys do for the community here, because you know, you're changing lives.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jermaine.
Jermaine Smith-Baugh joining us. Thank you for downloading Florida Business Minds, presented by the Florida Business Journals and brought to you by Tico People's Gas, at the heart of Florida's energy.